What I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is that in the moments where I have given, where I didn't know that I had it to give, abundance has shown up in my life.
Hey folks, this is Abe Shreve. Welcome to the Choose Difficult podcast. The path to success is not easy, and here we explore the stories of those who choose difficult and change the world they live in. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to a powerhouse of a woman. Charlotte Savoy wears many hats in business. She has a real estate team that will do around 200 transactions a year. She's been in the real estate industry for over 23 years. And depending on the time of history that you pick her up, there were years that she did over 1,500 transactions and years that she's done more like what she's doing now. She says somewhere around 150 to 200 transactions. She's the owner of a Keller Williams franchise, and she has a host of other different businesses, and she's the president of my company, this company. I trust her. I trust her without reservation. And those that hear Charlotte speak or spend time with Charlotte see someone who is highly calculated, very put together, very thoughtful. She's got a operations mind, but she also has the mind of a strategist. It's a really unique combination. Charlotte holds herself to an extremely high standard of accountability. It's part of the reason I trust her so much. It's part of the reason she gets so much done and people are so willing to come along with her. But to really understand what makes Charlotte tick, we've got to know a little something about her younger years, how she grew up. Charlotte grew up in Central Maryland, and she was born to young parents who in the first decade or so of her life struggled with substance abuse. She said that her house was chaotic and that there was a lot of anger, but she lived in this really unique community where she could look around and see others that had bigger lives and family relationships that she knew she wanted to have for herself. And so at the tender age of 17, she left the house.
I was 17 when I left. I didn't leave under the best circumstances. I left and I didn't go back. I remember my first apartment. I have a good friend of mine who actually lives right here in Ogden right now. I made her spend every night with me because I was scared to be there by myself. And it didn't last long because I probably, 17, you're not ready to be on your own, but I needed to be on my own. And I needed to get my life started. And I moved out of that apartment and into my grandmother's basement, where she had an apartment, and I lived there, and I didn't feel scared, and I was able to start building that life.
Charlotte has a very close relationship with her grandmother. In fact, it was from her grandmother that she learned to see the world through the lens of abundance. What can I do? What can I have versus what I don't have and what I can't have?
She had so much joy, and she had so much love for everyone, and a beautiful home with a beautiful yard, and she traveled, and she, what I felt like she had was a full life that was full of experiences and joy and cool things. And, she would take me to lunch with all of her girlfriends, and I would be the only little girl at the table, but there would be 10 women that are, in their 60s, and we're ordering lobster, and she's showing me, just such a unique experience that wasn't my everyday life. And she did it in such a way that she was kind and she cared about everybody. She had a housekeeper that she loved and adored. And even after my parents, my dad and his brothers and sister moved out, she continued to have this housekeeper come to her house every single day until she literally, just a couple of years before she passed, not because she needed a housekeeper, but because this woman had blessed her in helping her raise her kids. And that, Like she showed me just a lot of things about grace and about accepting other people. And I think as I'm saying it, I think what she showed me was my first taste of abundance instead of scarcity. It wasn't even a thought to her, do I keep my housekeeper? She didn't need the housekeeper. The housekeeper needed her. And so she came every day, and she paid for it, and she did it. And to me, that was, I think, in hindsight, that was an abundant mindset that a lot of people would say, thanks, but no thanks, I don't need you anymore. She said, thanks, and thank you for everything you did. And because of that, you're going to stay because I don't want you to worry about money or your kids.
This influence of Charlotte's grandmother teaching her abundance and helping her to understand that you can be more than your circumstances really connected with this inner drive that Charlotte was born with. Since she was 16 years old, she had been working already. In fact, she started working at a dating service.
When I left, I was working at an inbound and outbound call center, believe it or not, for a dating service. That today would probably be like eHarmony or something like that, where it wasn't slimy. We were actually filling out a survey, getting to know people, matching them, that kind of thing. And I started there when I was 16 and quickly realized it was something I was pretty good at. And I just quickly started taking extra shifts. And by 18, I was making a lot of money working a couple of shifts. I had worked my way into a leadership position. And then I just started taking on leadership and taking on leadership. And I worked there for probably 5 years. And it was such a great experience. I learned inside sales and outside sales and the psychology of sales and the psychology of people and follow-up and all the things that would become important in my professional life by wearing all of these hats inside of that company.
Yep, that's how Charlotte does it. That's for sure been my experience with her. Anywhere she goes, she rises to the top, and people seek her out for leadership roles. And then at the tender age of 19, she becomes a young mother, a single mom.
At 19, I became a single mom. So what was cool about that particular job was, if you've ever worked in a call center, you work shifts. So you have 4-hour shifts, and I could go to college, work a couple shifts, and schedule my, you know, my stuff around when I was in school. And my first semester in college was great. Second semester, I got pregnant. So I had to drop out of school and just work hard. And what I realized was working shifts with a baby until 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, that's not like a great mom life if you can choose it, right? So I never wanted my... I understood that I would have to work hard because I chose to have a child, and which it was a choice, and I knew the decision that I was making, and it was important to me that I be there for as many moments as I could be. And this shift work, while the money was really good, it took me away from my son. And it also, because I was so young, I knew that it would be important for me to eventually maybe find a husband or those kinds of things, that I would need to have like a social life. And I needed to find something that was a little bit more stable, maybe with health insurance. So what I did was I decided I would go and find a 9-to-5 job. And then a few shifts a week, I would work at that call center, in, you know, so that I could balance it all. So I went to work for a computer sales and service company as a dispatcher, dispatching tech nerds out to sites when their computers were down and printers were down. And in that job, the same thing happened that happened at the call center, which is I went in, I went all in, I was intensely focused around, okay, this is my job, here's how I do it, how do I excel, how do I win? And within 30 days, I took my boss's job. Then within 60 days, I took that boss's job, not intentionally, but just in being like deeply committed to, this is what I'm here to do a job and I'm going to do it. I had extreme work ethic at a really young age. And during that time, met my husband and stopped working at the call center, was making enough money at the computer sales and service company to just have that job, and realized there was a ceiling. When you work in a company that's a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday, there's a ceiling there. You get a salary, and I could take the bosses. There was only one layer higher for me to go, and that wasn't going to be enough to live the life that I knew I wanted to have.
So you're starting to understand a little bit about what makes Charlotte tick, but there's this whole other side of this part of her life that I feel like if I didn't share it with you, it'd be podcast malpractice. You see, Charlotte raced cars. Fast and Furious style. She raced for pink slips. She had a car. She had a race car, and she would do this. She would race. And one day she's at a gas station, and she looks over and sees Ike. This is, at the time, a guy that she's interested in, later would become her husband, a man that I'm certain, if all of you saw him, you would agree with me that he could pull a tree out of the ground with his bare hands. He's a gentle giant, but she looks over and sees Ike. To get his attention, she cross-wires the speakers in her car, in her race car. By the way, the speakers she installed. She cross-wires them and calls Ike over to help. He comes over, and that's really how they first met. And, you know, he'd be a little slow, and she'd end up prompting him, but eventually they would come together. And they decided to buy a house. They found a house online. They called that agent. The agent really didn't ask any questions, that realtor. They found a house, and she sold it to him. And that ended up being in a community they didn't want to live. It was far away from all of their friends. It was away from their dining spots. And like so many that get into that profession, Charlotte thought, there has to be a way this is done better.
What I realized in that moment was there's got to be a better way to do this. If somebody contacts somebody and says, I want to buy a house, which I think, even though I was 23, I think is probably one of the biggest purchases of your life. There should be like a consultation, or you should ask me some questions and make sure this is the right house. So I said, you know what? I'm going to get my real estate license. And when I was in licensing school, the teacher said, well, we've got this new addendum because we've got these things happening we've heard called buyer agents versus seller agents. So I was curious about that. And I went and I did some research, and I found this guy named Howard Brenton, who was amazing. He was a real estate training guru back then. And he had this program called Buyer Agent University. So I was like, great, I'm going to sign up for that. So I called the agent that I bought my house with, and I said, congratulations, you just hired your first buyer agent. And she said, huh? What's a buyer agent? And I said, well, me. I'm going to start taking over all of your buyers because you do kind of a crummy job at it. So she was like a little befuddled and was like, okay, well, wait, how will this work? And I was like, I'm going to bring my own clients. We're going to split the money. I'm going to do the buyer consults. We're going to make sure that nobody gets into a house that they shouldn't. So I went through this whole thing, got my real estate license, and in my first 12 months selling homes while I was working full time, made twice my salary from the computer sales and service company selling houses. So I was like, wait a second, I'm doing this part time. I'm making twice as much. My husband and I want to have a family. We'd like to have a bigger house. We're going to have college to pay. Like, we've got all these things that are going to be happening. So how can I take this and build the life that I want? This to me seems like it makes more sense. So I quit cold turkey, quit my full-time job, no benefits, no nothing, just went all in, of course, with my husband's blessing. But that was scary and really not. It felt very empowering to me because I felt like I have the ability to actually put in what I put in is what I'm going to get out. So I just went to work and I just learned everything I could possibly learn and crushed real estate, partnered with another agent where my fourth year in real estate, we became the number one real estate team in the world at RE/MAX, grew that team massively, and joined Keller Williams the end of 2005, also as the number one team in the world, all brokerages. It was a big deal. And I love the learning process and the pouring in and figuring things out and how can I take this and make it really big and successful. And what I learned along the way is that what I really liked was creating opportunity for other people, because the truth is that I was, the circumstances that I come from should have, in theory, if you look, you know, I don't know, if you look at statistics and you look at where people come from and their circumstances and what did their parents do and how much money did everybody make and where did they live and what was their education and all of that, statistically, I think the odds were stacked against me. And yet I had found this business and this, not just in real estate in general, but in businesses that are entrepreneurial, that what you put in is what you can get out, and you can actually have a really balanced life and great kids and a great family and just an amazing life if you'll put in the work. And so what I realized was, well, I can take the real estate industry and what I've learned there about building a real estate business and create opportunity for people like me who, if they'll just put in the work, could also create an amazing life. Even if the odds said, nah, what you come from, where you come from, who you come from, and you're a single mom at 19, yeah, probably not. This story should have looked a lot different for me.
One of the things that I love about Charlotte, and I think this is a hallmark of great producers, of people that build a big life, is this pathological restlessness to create and build more. It's not just the meaningless pursuit of more for the sake of having things, but it's this understanding that when you work smart and you work hard, you lean in heavy, you can create the life you want. Listen to it again. When you lean in heavy, you do the work and you work smart, you can create the life you want. And I think a lot of people look at entrepreneurs and they look at business owners. I've had people that look at me this way and they think, well, it's easy for you to say, look where you are. What a myth. What a crock of crap, if I may. What they don't understand is that in casting that view of me, they have put handcuffs on themselves. They're holding themselves hostage by their own limitations. Everyone that achieves success does it with really hard work and this willingness to measure what's working and make adjustments. That's what Charlotte is talking about. In fact, she shared with us that she learned early in her sales career that she could create the life she wanted because she won a sales contest.
The year I met my husband, it wasn't even the year, like a month after I met my husband, I won a sales contest. I was the number one dating service sales chick. And I won a 10-day cruise to 7 different islands, and I could bring a guest. So I met this guy who became my husband. I was like, hey, you want to go on a cruise with me? And he's like, sure, I do. So we go on this 10-day cruise. And what was interesting is we went to Guadeloupe and Grenada and Caracas and all of these places that I'd only ever seen on a globe. I didn't know they were even real places. But at 20 years old, my hard work put us on a boat and created 10 days of memories and experiences and sights and sounds and tastes that would change my life forever.
Charlotte would harness this work ethic and this desire to create a bigger life. And it would lead us to where she is now a partner in the largest, most successful real estate team in the entire industry. That is ridiculous high achievement. And then this little thing happened right around 2008. I don't remember. I think I blacked out for like 8 years, but it was rough for those of us that owned businesses at the time. It was a great recession.
So I was in a partnership. I owned a franchise, a large real estate team, and we're number one in the world. We're killing it. We had launched a huge office and we had 50 or 60 people. And I mean, we were killing it. And at some point in that, the market started to shift and it was a pretty abrupt economy shift. Almost overnight, our market stopped. And what ended up happening was literally in a period of 90 days, we laid off half of our team. It was such a scary time. I was in my early 30s, 3 little kids, for probably 8 or 9 years had been making hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not talking like little dollars, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, just doing what I did, selling houses and learning to lead, you know, leading some teams in the team and growing businesses and that kind of thing. But young, didn't come from money, didn't understand money, didn't have money training, you know, didn't finish college, and was invested in learning about business and my craft, but not about what to do when you have money and what, like those things that you learn when you have to. We, in a period of 90 days, my husband and I went from literally four or five cars, couple of houses, all the businesses. I mean, just this amazing life to, in a 90-day period, $486,000 in debt. Because we had made irresponsible decisions, selfish decisions, and even more than the $486,000 in debt that we had amassed, I remember feeling as a leader and as a person and a partner in this company, how awful it was to be laying people off like at Christmas. Literally, I'm sorry, you don't have a job anymore. And I was very clear that as a leader in that company and an agent, that those people's families relied on me to be better than that. And I think it probably was when it finally hit me that leadership mattered to me, that creating opportunity for people mattered to me more than just me having a great life, because I had a great life and it went away. In 90 days, it was gone. That hurt. It was painful. What was more painful was the number of people that were affected, that I watched families suffer and people suffer and kids suffer, and knowing that, like, could I have done something to prevent that changed me, because it wasn't just me and my family, it was lots of families. And was I entirely responsible for that? No. Did I have a place in that? Sure. I also had a partner who didn't go broke, who didn't get laid off, who didn't lose it all. And what I also learned in that time was the type of leader I wanted to be. And the type of leader that I wanted to be was the type of leader that wanted to make sure that everyone around me had a great life, not just me. I really wanted abundance. To me meant that everybody would win, not just me. And it became vividly clear to me that that would be like my next move. That would be the next area of growth that I'd have to have. We'd have to get through this really tough period. But on the other side of that, part of that was I had to change.
That is the heart of a true leader, when you are crippled with fear and uncertainty and anxiety. And part of your thought process is, what else could I have done for those I was leading? That they deserved, I like how she said, they deserved better of me. Now, Charlotte didn't get a shortcut through this. And as you're about to see, this was a long, hard fought battle. But our lives are made up of seasons. And when we enter a difficult season, one thing that we can know, especially through experience, is that it doesn't last forever. That there are things we can do. There are levers we can pull that make changes. And that's what Charlotte started to really lean into.
I had found so much success for such a straight run of time from the very beginning that I just believed we'd always be making that much money. It didn't occur to me that just as hard as you work is, you know, you can have any life you want if you're willing to work that hard. It doesn't always play out that way. I hadn't experienced that yet. You work hard, you make a lot of money. My hard work wasn't paying off, and in fact had gone in the opposite direction. So we're $486,000 in debt. We have little kids. I was in denial. I wasn't ready to change our lifestyle. I just kept thinking, I just got to work harder. I'm just going to keep working harder. And, you know, if I could go back, I have a lot of lessons that I learned about that and a lot of regrets. You know, my kids were really little at that point. And because we had moved into the best school district and lived in the best house and drove the best cars, I felt like it was my responsibility to keep that going. And I couldn't figure out how to keep it going. And the debt kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I wasn't willing to admit that this was happening. And so there came a point where I looked at my husband and he looked at me and we're both kind of blaming each other. Like, how did it get this big? Because it wasn't $486,000 in one day, right? It probably started at like 250 and then 280. And then all of a sudden it was so big that it was like, well, how do you stop this freight train in motion? And I said to him one night, I can't do this anymore. I don't know how to fix this. I can't breathe. I can't sleep. I don't actually know what to do. And I can't make this better. So I need your help. And it was the first time that I had ever actually told him what was happening. Because in our household, everybody has their roles, right? Like he fixes cars and mows the lawn and I write the checks and it's just how our family flows. And I didn't want to have to admit to him that this life that we had been building, I couldn't maintain by myself. And of course he worked and he helped and that kind of thing. But ultimately I felt responsible because he was okay with lesser of a life. I was not. So I said to him, I need your help and we have to do this together. And he surprised me in his response and said, like, show it to me. What are we talking about? I didn't even know you were carrying this load. And so I showed him everything and it was humbling and it was embarrassing and I was full of shame and I felt like a disappointment and that I had let him down, let my kids down. And he said to me, all of these things don't matter. The only thing that matters is you and I are together with our kids. That's it. Everything else doesn't matter. And I said, okay, well, what do we do? And he goes, well, if you were talking to somebody in this situation, what would you tell them to do? And I said, I would tell them to get a coach. Because in my business life, when we hit a ceiling, we would get a coach. It's what we did. And he said, great, how do we get a coach? I said, we can't afford a coach. And I don't even know who coaches you through $500,000 in debt in the worst recession. Like, I don't even know. And he said, well, you know a lot of successful people. Who do we call? And so I called the best friend of my former business partner and I said, I need your help. I can't pay you, but I need a coach that will hold me accountable to help my family get out from under this. I don't know what to do. But if you will help me, I will repay you in time or money as soon as I can. And he said, you got it. Here's what we're going to do. And he helped me build a plan. And he said, you're going to write down every single thing you spend, every single debt that you have. We're going to put money in envelopes. I mean, we went for it. And what he said to me that was so important was, I'm going to meet with you once a month. I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to review what you've done. And if you didn't do it, I'm not helping you anymore. This was a guy who had acquired massive wealth, but he went bankrupt at 50. And so I think in hindsight, he wanted to help me because he had himself been there. So he literally would give me the work and we whittled away dollar by dollar by dollar of that $486,000. And what I'll tell you is that we paid that debt off in 22 months and we paid that debt off by working really hard, both my husband and I, and being intensely focused and committed around every single dollar that we spent. And that 22 months was so hard, not because we weren't getting to go on magical trips, but because, again, my kids were really little and we had to sell our home at short sale. We had a car repossessed from our driveway with my kids' backpacks inside. My son wanted to play football. I couldn't afford for him to play football. It's $50. And yet, in those moments that felt so suffocating, when we had the plan and we had the money in the envelopes, the first time my son came and said, I want to sign up for football, I didn't have the money. When he came to me in the spring and said, I want to play lacrosse, but I know we don't have the money, but I really want to play. I had money in another envelope. And so I said, you can play if for the next month you're willing to go to the grocery store with me and my big embarrassing coupon binder. And we'll go aisle by aisle and we'll save that $56 in the food that we eat. And then we'll take that money and you can play lacrosse. And he said, deal, Mom. And we did for a month. We went and I'm like, dude, you can't have Captain Crunch. It's corn chex or wheat flakes. Which do you like? He's like, neither. I'm like, well, which one do you like more? Corn chex it is, right? So even a little moment like that was a like small ray of light in this suffocating, unbelievable, how am I going to get out of this? And we had moments like that all the time. And in hindsight, my kids today are grateful and they are not spoiled and they are not entitled. And yet they know what it's like to have an incredible life and to work for it because they witnessed their parents put in this really hard work. And I wouldn't go back and change it. And it was hard. It just was brutally hard. So 22 months, we pay off the debt. After we short sold our house, we rented a house in our existing neighborhood so that my kids could move, stay in their school district. And at the end of that short sale, 2 years, we were able to buy another house. So we purchased a house with very little money down in the same school district. Felt like things were turning up. The month we moved into the house, the IRS sent us a letter that they were auditing us. And with that audit was a $250,000 personal lien against us, and they froze all of our assets and credit the month we moved into our brand new house. Now, in that time, real estate had picked up. We were making money again, obviously, because that's how I could pay off the debt. We were working hard, keeping expenses low, bought a house that was within our means, and we get hit with the IRS audit. And I call my accountant and I'm like, what is this? And he's like, let me call and find out. And he calls back and he says, you need a lawyer. And I was like, what do I need a lawyer for? He said, I think they're coming after you for fraud. I said, fraud of what? He's like, I don't know. I don't know what they're looking for, but I don't feel comfortable advising you through this because I think they think that your short sale wasn't real, that you're not really broke, that you, I think they think you're hiding money. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, who would drag their family through the last 3 years that I, like, who would do, have you seen me at the grocery store with the coupon binder? Who would do that just to hide money from the IRS? No way. So I thought, okay, well, that's fine. We'll get a lawyer. So I call the lawyer, and long story short, the audit took 22 months, $10,000 a month in legal and accounting bills. I remember a July 4th weekend going to get supplies for a July 4th barbecue. My credit card got declined. And it wasn't my credit card. It was my ATM card. And I thought, well, that's weird because we have money in there. There's like, I don't know, $5,000 or something in there. Why? So I swiped the other one. That one didn't work. I swiped the next one and it didn't work. And I was like, I don't understand what's happening. So I log into my bank account. Every single bank account I had been depleted to zero. I had employees. I had a house. I had cars. I had businesses. What do you mean every account's at zero? Every account was at zero because the IRS went in and depleted my accounts to zero. So the lawyer calls and he says, they now want to audit 2 additional years. They didn't find what they were looking for in the first year. They're auditing 2 additional years. They've added another lien to you. Now, he was able to overturn the depletion of our accounts, and we did get that money back. But for a week, we had $0. I'm like, is this ever going to end? Like, do we get a break? The IRS shows up at my house unannounced. A guy in a trench coat shows up at my son's school bus as he's getting off the bus and says, are your parents home? I want to come inside. I wasn't home because I was working. My son ran into the house and called me and said, Mom, there's a man outside that wants to come inside. And I said, do not let him in the house. I called the police because I didn't know who it was. It was the IRS. They thought they could come inside unannounced and see our home office because they didn't believe that we had been through what we've been through and that we must be hiding money. You fast forward through that, 22 months we dealt with that every month. Every month it was something new. They didn't find anything, nothing. They released the liens and the audit at month 22, that their statute of limitations is 24. At month 22, they ended the audit, they released the liens. So from 2008 to 2016, not a fun time.
In essence, Charlotte and her family, along with so many of us, were kicked right to the bottom of the hierarchy of needs. It's interesting how you look at people differently. I remember very well the season that I refer to as long, dark, lonely nights. It was I didn't go through all the same things that Charlotte did, but I feared the IRS because of some of what they could do, not because I had committed any kind of a fraud. You can only imagine what this must have been like for her. But Charlotte did what you need to do in those moments. She started to look around, focus on what truly matters in her life. She poured all of her attention into what she could do. She didn't just stay focused on what she couldn't do. I mean, it was this kind of grit that at the age of 17 got her out the door and into her own apartment. And all these years later and all the lessons later, it's still helping her.
I always look for the lesson, and I look for what I need or needed to learn in that moment. And this is what I will tell you. I paid off that $486,000 in 22 months like it was a badge of honor. I was on a mission and I was going to pay it off, and then we were going to get back to business as usual. We were going to go back to that life. And to me, it was a roadblock. It wasn't something we needed to change. It was a terrible circumstance that we needed to make better and just go back to normal. The audit, when it was happening, was so bad that in hindsight, what I actually think is that was God's way of saying, you're not ready. You're not ready for this life that you think you want and that you've been working for. You're not ready. And so we're going to do an audit. We're going to drag you right through that because you're going to learn this lesson one way or another. That 22 months, I learned to appreciate the wealth that we had had and the wealth that I would want. And I learned how to run businesses and our finances and our life in a way that we had never done before. In the period where we were paying off the $486,000, what I learned was I'm responsible for me, and nobody else is responsible for the situation that I put us in. Not my husband, not my kids, not my influencers, not my business partners. I made bad decisions, and I can't change anyone but me. So I'm going to change me. I'm going to be a better version of myself, and I'm going to put in the work to focus on abundance and to focus on, I've always been an accountable person and a learning-based person, but learning-based and accountable around business, not around my personal habits and behavior and how I showed up as a mom, as a wife, as a partner, as a friend. And what I also learned is you're only as good as the five people you surround yourself. You know, I've heard that my whole adult life. That became very real to me when I was faced with suffocating debt and pain. I felt incredibly alone. Yet I had a business partner and coworkers and a husband, and yet I felt completely and utterly alone. And I looked at the people around me and who I wanted to become, and I realized that I'm going to surround myself with the people that I want to become, not the people that are around me now. The only way I'm going to get out of this is to change that circle. It started with the coach and my husband and focusing on those two, and then changing the people that were around me, starting my own business, not having a business partner, launching my own business, surrounding myself with people that were the kind of moms I wanted to be, the kind of wife I wanted to be. And I just put in a lot of work around that. And today it's different.
I think that one of the amazing things about what Charlotte is sharing with us and her unguarded nature in sharing her difficult times with us is that these things are not unique to Charlotte. Life will dish up opportunities to start over. If we lack an understanding of those things that are the most important in life, those things that matter most, life will bring us to our knees and provide an opportunity to realign with true priorities. I asked Charlotte, after all of it, what did you discover really mattered to you?
Looking back, I think what I thought mattered more than it did was looking good and being right. It mattered to me what other people's perception of me was. I don't think I knew it at the time, but in hindsight, it mattered to me that I looked like I had it all together. Today, that's very different. this story that I'm telling you is not a story I'm ashamed of. It's not a story that I hide from. I will tell it to anybody and everybody, because what I know is that there is such shame around money and the lack thereof and what it does to families and marriages and people. And it's such an important part of my journey, because I thought what mattered was having a lot of money and having great things and that it would buy the great things. What I now understand, having accumulated wealth again and Xing over what I had ever accumulated before, was that the money makes it easier, but that's not actually what's important. To me, what's important is creating the memories and enjoying the experience and being present for the moments. If I could go back and change one thing, I would have worked less. My youngest just turned 18. I would have worked less and been more mentally present when they were little, because it's just time you don't get back. And I thought what mattered was the big house and the nice cars and the great clothes and all this, you know, mystical childhood experience. And the truth is, that's not at all what matters. Not at all. Now, luckily, I figured it out before they were gone. And the last 10 years, I've had it a little more together. But I sure wish I would have figured it out sooner. And I wish I would have spent the time to, or surrounded myself with people that cared enough about me to say, hey, you're making an awful lot of money. Can I help you? Let's have a financial plan. Are you paying your taxes quarterly? Those are conversations that a lot of leaders and business owners don't have with their people. It's super important. And today, anybody that's in any one of my organizations will tell you, we do net worth statements every single month. We look at our debts. We talk about taxes, because I never, ever want anybody to go through what I went through if I'm their leader, because we didn't talk about it.
There was a book written of a kind of a long-term study of sorts called The Five Regrets of the Dying. And a nurse who worked with terminally ill elderly cataloged their greatest regrets. Google it. It's really fascinating. In fact, if you just Google that title, it'll give you the regrets, and I'll even save you reading the book because it's kind of all there. But one of them is, I wish I hadn't worked so much. You know, one of the things that Charlotte has shared with us in this incredible journey, by the way, she's at halftime. You haven't even seen what she's doing next. Like, she's doing such big things with our organization. But there inevitably comes a point where you look around at the people around you and you realize we have built our relationships through experiences together, or we haven't. I ask CEOs all the time, is the childhood of your kids for sale? And the answer is, of course, always no. No, it's not for sale. However, if you are mentally, physically, and emotionally unavailable to them, if your work takes so much you have nothing left, then you're selling their childhood for whatever compensation you're getting in that work. Doesn't have to be that way. And Charlotte, to me, is a shining example of someone who has gone through really difficult lessons. And all along the way, she's a great example of one who looks back, learns, and changes the future. I have learned so much from Charlotte. I'm so grateful to have her as my partner. If you're interested in learning more about the net worth tracker and sheet that she does, we offer a weekly class on it. Just see the show notes for a link to that. Well, there you have it, folks. I hope you took a ton of notes. And if you haven't, go back and listen to this episode again. There are incredible lessons for life in here. And if you're a business leader and you would like to know what hiring a coach would look like for you and your organization, head over to mymapscoach.com and let's set up a meeting. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us an honest review. It really helps us in our mission to help others. I hope you've enjoyed our time together, and I hope you'll join us next time as we continue to explore the stories of extraordinary individuals who choose difficult.